I'm Pastor Emily, and my pronouns are they, them, theirs.
And I'm Pastor Kay, and my pronouns are she, her.
And we are Nerds at Church, a queer feminist podcast diving deep into faith, nerdery, and the Bible.
In our fourth season, we're diving deep into the season of Epiphany, including stars, astronomy, and all things magic.
Whether you're a Trekkie or a bookworm, a comics fan or a science nerd,
or even a historical costumer or artist,
we've got connections for you.
And Emily still has thoughts on Lembas bread.
If you've ever wondered what gifts Muppet Magi would bring, or how they'd name constellations, we've got the perfect segment for you.
Nerds at Church releases Wednesday mornings on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you catch your podcasts. If you love the weekly scripture readings, also known as the lectionary, our previous episodes are going up on YouTube, too, so you can find us there for past and current episodes, and they all have captions.
As the ancient Christian said,
Pax Vobiscum.
Greetings! You are listening to Horror Nerds at Church, a ridiculously queer podcast where we take a deep dive into a horror film and talk about how it connects to queerness, religion, and theology. I'm Pastor Emily, and I am the blue alien elephant in Jabba's palace.
Love it. And a keyboardist. Let me try that again. And a keyboardist, too. Fancy.
I mean, sure. Mostly it's the elephant.
Of course. And I'm Pace, and I am Wicket. That's it. I'm Wicket. That's who I am. Follow us on Patreon at patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. It starts at only $5 to sign up. And this episode comes out on February 29th. I think this might be the only episode that we will probably likely ever record that actually is dropping on the leap day itself. Because how frequent is it that a leap day lands on a Thursday?
Yeah. Unless we have something like this season where we're like, we promised it would go out in by the end of this month.
Yeah, and true. So it is improbable that we will have another episode release, but not impossible release on the last day of leap day. But anyway, it's the last day of February. So that means tomorrow, March, in March, you're going to be getting some really cool stuff on Patreon. If you're a Patreon supporter, you're going to be getting our Predators movie commentary. We have our BooTube on Ahsoka Tano's arc in Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels.
For our horror buffs.
And yeah, and then for for everybody. And for our horror buffs, though, for our horror buffs, you get the Clone Wars movie. So a lot of cool stuff coming out this month or in March. So you better join.
You know you want to.
Right.
Also, it supports us who are putting in a lot of effort and work for this.
Yes. We love all of you, though, whether you support us or not. But it does help us keep the show going if you are able to support. And then also check out our show notes for any content warnings for this episode. That's where you'll find those. Before we get into talking about the movie of the day, how have you been, Emily?
Oh, well, you know. Not too terrible. Today was an art day, which was lovely. And we've been watching a lot of pretty cool documentaries and stuff this month. So, feeling good. How about you?
Nice. Today for me is the last day that when we're recording this, to be clear, it's the last day that my partner is away. He is returning this evening and I'm picking him up from the airport. So I'm excited about that. In the meantime, I've been watching a shit ton of Doctor Who, which is no surprise to anyone who's listening to the past few episodes. I basically spent the entire time he was away, super high and watching Doctor Who. So that was my last week. I have been reading some cool stuff, though. Let's see. Let me say that again. Go ahead.
I've been listening to the 100 Years War on Palestine, which is fascinating. And traces back the last 100 years of what has been happening in Palestine, which is really enlightening.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Oh, and not course, awesome, because it's terrifying and it's depressing, but
it's not the, awesome, book but sounds the book sounds awesome. It's really good. And of course, Return of the Jedi from a certain point of view.
Yeah, yeah. I was hoping to read the novelization before this episode, but I ran out of time. Mm-hmm. But I will eventually. But I have been reading. I just finished Stephen King's book on writing, which if you are a writer, I highly recommend this book. It's one of my favorite books on the craft. Another one that I like is Annie Dillard's. I can't remember what hers is called. But anyway, I've read this for the first time in high school. Loved it. But I'm working on my dissertation, as some of you all may know. And I was really struggling with it for a variety of reasons over the past, 4 years I've been working on it. So I was like, you know what really helped me when I was first deciding that I loved writing and wanted to write all the time was reading Stephen King's book. So I'm going to revisit it and see if that helps. And holy shit, it did help. The day that this episode is being recorded, I just sent another chapter off to my advisor, in large part because of the inspiration of rereading on writing. So
nice.
Yeah, so that's a great book. And also at Emily's recommendation, I am rereading a book. This time I'm doing it on audiobook because I enjoy audiobook of Before We Were Trans, A New History of Gender by Kit Ham, I believe is how you say their last name, Ham. And it's read by Kit Ham. So that's one of the reasons. Yeah. So I was like, oh, when I saw that my library had it on audiobook and is read by the author, it's like, I'll listen to it on audiobook. Yeah.
I really like it when stuff is written, is read by the author.
Yes. So that's about it for me, though. And still, of course, working slowly through from a certain point of view.
Mm-hmm. Do you think by the time of this airing, we will have recorded our episode?
No, I don't think we'll have time because Brian and I have to move.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm still only like maybe halfway through the book. And so by the time this comes out in a week and a half, I'm not sure.
That's fair. I will have finished.
But it'll come out sometime, y'all.
Now that we're into the season with our regular episodes, I think that helps.
Yeah. And also, so far, from a certain point of view, the books have been getting a lot more listens than the episodes on the movies.
That's because we have not been sharing the way that we used to share.
I have never really shared, but Emily shares a lot, so that helps.
Why am I podcasting with two people who basically never share?
I don't. Social media. I hate social media. It really fucks with my anxiety and my mental health.
So. I mean, that's real.
Yeah. We just need to hire someone to do Diakonia's social media. So if you continue to support us on Patreon, you never know what will happen. Maybe we'll be able to do that.
Or somebody to edit our podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be handy for both of them.
Especially because Horror Nerds at Church tends to run long. And that means for every hour of talking, it's about an hour and a half of editing. So for episodes that are 2 hours long, it's typically 3 hours worth of editing. And since we're releasing weekly and we have Patreon episodes, I'm spending like 15 hours a week on the podcast lately.
Yeah, so, me too. At least not on the podcasts.
Yeah. Well, I guess with that lovely behind the scenes news for y'all. Ta-da! We do love this, we promise.
We would not be it's just evidence of we would not be doing this if we didn't love it.
It's true. Oh, I'm also eating more rose chocolate because I'm obsessed. Go back and listen to
jelly beans.
One of our episodes where we talked about that. I can't remember which one. So we are covering Star Wars Episode 6, Return of the Jedi, directed by Richard Marquand. Came out in 1983, so 41 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And to contextualize that, I'm about to be turning 40 because I was born in 1985, so that's fast approaching for pace. But also, 1983 was the year of the movies Flashdance, Trading Places.
I've seen Trading Places.
Okay. I don't think that one's aged well. I don't think it was that good when it aged well when it came out. Octopussy, which still to this day, how did that ever get made and get past censors? Another James Bond movie, Never Say Never Again. Two James Bond movies in 1 year, but that's a story for another day about how that happened. Mr. Mom, Risky Business, The Black Stallion Returns, The Outsiders, Superman 3, Scarface, and because we're talking about this is being our space season, it's also the year The Right Stuff came out.
Yeah, I don't know most of those movies.
Right Stuff is a fun movie to watch. It's about the first astronauts in NASA, and because they had the right stuff, that's where the title comes from, to go to space and all that stuff.
That's actually so inaccurate, but okay.
Yeah, well, you can watch it to complain about it then.
We already recorded our episode for the space programs for Nerds at Church.
And then for Horror World, a lot came out in 1983. Videodrome, which let's do a David Cronenberg season one of these days. I know it's body horror, but oh my god, we need to cover so many of his movies.
What kind of body horror is it?
Gross kind.
Oh.
Okay. But not like Saw type of body horror. It's more like bodies being horrific body horror.
That does not clarify for me. Is it not like Nightmare on Elm Street 2?
Kind of not. It's hard to say. Videodrome, it is interesting because it's about a man who gets addicted to watching movies, and he ends up growing his body ends up growing a cavity in his chest that he can put movies directly into. So that's the kind of body horror. Okay. It's a really fun movie, though. The Hunger, about vampires. Final Terror, a slasher movie. Psycho 2. Twilight Zone, the movie. Jaws 3D. One of these years where I'll have to do a shark summer season, I think.
That would be fun.
Crawl, which is more sci-fi than horror, but I just had to list it there because it is horrific for a lot of other reasons. Cujo, Christine, and The Dead Zone all came out this year, all based on Stephen King novels. I just find that amazing. Nightmares came out, Amityville 3D, Sleepaway Camp. I kind of want to do Sleepaway Camp on this podcast, but it's one that kind of has all sorts of it similar to some of the other movies on this that we talked about on this podcast. It is a movie that has divided the queer community, where some people really love it, some people really hate it, because there's a huge spoiler in that movie about someone being trans, and I personally feel that it is both awful, but I kind of also love it, even though it's super harmful to trans people. But anyway, so we may do Sleepaway Camp one of these. In part because I'm really curious what Emily will think of it. And then notably, there was no Friday the 13th movie to come out in this year. It is one of the rare years in the 1980s that did not see a Friday the 13th movie. We saw one in 1980, 1981, 1982. It skips 83, comes back 84.
Wow.
So. Well, when was the first time you have seen Return of the Jedi?
I feel a bit like a broken record on this, but I don't remember. I just remember for this original trilogy, all of them I remember having at home and seeing them. And then I remember my first real memory is for the prequel trilogy. So I don't know.
Nice.
Yeah. What about you?
I remember seeing, so similar to last time in Empire, told the story about how my grandfather was dying. And so I was staying at a family friend's house, and they had introduced me to watching all the Star Wars films. I'm pretty sure I'd seen pieces of them before, but that's like the first time I ever like watched them consecutively. I fell in love with Star Wars. Mm-hmm. So all of that is when I first saw this, but I do remember, I think even before watching Return of the, before this, even when I was younger, just because Star Wars was such a pop culture phenomenon, like you couldn't, even if you didn't watch it, you knew about it because it was just a huge thing. There were Ewok toys and stuffed animals. I have an Ewok stuffed animal. Mm-hmm. And from like the late 80s, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. And I loved pretending I was an Ewok, pretending I was Wicket. And so, and I remember, so here's a little bit tie into Faith, maybe a church horror story, but not really horror. It's kind of cute, but kind of sad and depressing because of how kids especially tend to take things literally. So the Bible verse about if one has faith the size of a mustard seed, then one can move mountains. Mm-hmm. I remember that meaning to me as a little kid, that if I absolutely believed, then anything was possible. And so I believed and prayed to God ceaselessly to be turned into an Ewok, and it never happened. And I was so depressed and felt that my faith must not have been good enough for me to not be turned into an Ewok.
Oh, Pacifer. Oh, Pace.
Baby Pace, yes.
Poor baby Pace.
So.
Sad days. Right? And then you look back at it and you're like, was that the seed that led me to where I am today?
maybe.
Tragedy. Right?
I also prayed that I could be a horse. It was either a horse or an Ewok, and God made neither come true. I was a horse girl, by the way, in case there was any doubts about that.
Of course you were. Of course.
So, behind the scenes of this movie, anything from you, Emily? Oh, I guess Take a Shot from me. It was before I was 9. Before I was 12. Yeah. But anyway.
No, I have nothing. I did not watch. We watched the movie this morning, so I did not have time to watch the commentary episodes. But they made changes between theatrical and original.
Yep. And as a reminder for all of those, the changes, the three movies were re-released in 1997 and 1998 in theaters in preparation for The Phantom Menace. And that's when the special editions first premiered. And so ever since then, the special editions are considered canon and the theatrical releases are not, according to Lucasfilm. Not to our hearts, of course.
Yes. Lucasfilms does not have that authority. There's not the council and Constantine at Nicaea or whatever.
Yeah. There's the council at Skywalker Ranch, though. So.
Well, that's just unfortunate.
So, this is directed The director, as I said, he was an up-and-coming director, but he died from a stroke at 49, only a few years after this movie came out. But speaking of David Cronenberg, who I mentioned earlier for directing Videodrome, he was actually on the shortlist to direct. And so I would love to see Cronenberg, who's famous for body horror, especially, what his version of this movie might have been. Mm-hmm. The original title was Revenge of the Jedi. And there are even posters that were printed out with that, with the release date coming soon. But upon further thought, George Lucas was like, well, Jedis wouldn't take revenge. So he changed the name to Return of the Jedi. And so if you can cancel the release of all the posters and stuff to theaters. So if you can find a truly original, authentic Revenge of the Jedi poster, it is worth lots of money. It was filmed under the secret title of Blue Harvest, with the tagline Horror Beyond Imagination. So another connection to our horror podcast. And that was done for a variety of reasons. One, this was starting the beginning of being conscientious about spoilers and stuff. And so if you film it under a different title, people don't know it's a Star Wars film, so people aren't interested in it and trying to find out what's happening. Also, the filming of Empire Strikes Back, allegedly there was a lot of price gouging by people because they knew it was a Star Wars film, so they knew they could afford it, so they would price gouge. And so to avoid that, they were filming it under a different name, so vendors wouldn't price gouge to them. And then... yeah, and then also just kind of was able to keep the production a little bit secret and a little bit less of a media circus. But Blue Harvest has kind of gone on to be a kind of in-joke in the Star Wars fandom with a lot of stuff referencing Blue Harvest and things. Lawrence Kasdan, who co-wrote Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi with George Lucas, Lawrence Kasdan, and Harrison Ford wanted Han Solo to die in this movie. And their idea was to have him die in the first third of the film, and to have him as kind of like a sacrifice himself for others, which would kind of show that completion of the character arc from the first one, all caring only about himself, to now he is willing to go so far as to like die for other people. But George Lucas refused.
Because he knew Han well enough to know that Han needed more time to complete that character arc.
It was George Lucas's reason was actually because he's like, he wanted to sell Harrison Ford action figures and worried that would cut into that.
I mean, I assumed it was something like that. Hashtag capitalism, but
yeah. Original draft of the script was going to have them visiting Kashyyyk, the homeworld of the Wookiees, instead of the Ewoks. However, that was considered to be too expensive. So they decided to switch it up and introduce a new species of creatures, the Ewoks.
That seems kind of rude.
Yeah. The what is it? The rumor is that George Lucas wanted that to sell more toys because he thought that the Ewoks would sell toys. I don't think that's necessarily true, but it could be. He clearly was motivated by the toy sales, as we just talked about the Han Solo one.
He's pretty hashtag capitalism boy.
Yeah. There's a lot of fans who criticize the third act of this movie when the Ewoks are able to defeat the stormtroopers, because Palpatine says that this is his best legion of stormtroopers are there to fight against the rebels on the planet. And so the idea that these little diminutive Ewoks could defeat the best stormtroopers has a lot of fans being like, no, that's not real, they couldn't do that.
Excuse but, you.
Exactly.
They may be small, but they are mighty, and they are coordinated and
exactly. And George
underestimated.
Exactly. And George Lucas has referenced real life things like the Viet Cong and other guerrilla warfare strategies where local people who know the territory and know the ground are able to, in real life, this has happened many times in history, are able to defeat those people with superior technologies. Mm-hmm. So disregard that criticism. Yeah. And the last thing I have, kind of two related things, is there are a few deleted scenes, but one of the deleted scenes that I kind of wish they had kept in was Luke Skywalker finishing his lightsaber, constructing his lightsaber on Tatooine, and turns it on for the first time. And he's hanging out with R2-D2 as he does that, and that kind of connects that beginning of R2-D2 going in. Does R2-D2 Jabba's palace? Does R2-D2 know what's happening? Yes.
I mean, I think there is an argument to be made that R2-D2 knows part of what's going on, but not necessarily all of it. Except that, like, if he's recording a message, R2-D2 has to be there for the whole message.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure R2-D2 knows.
I'm pretty sure because it's R2-D2. Right, because it's R2-D2, and yeah. R2-D2 is brilliant and is a Force user, so.
Yeah. Yep. And then the other thing is that originally Luke's lightsaber was going to be blue, just like his dad's. There was only the idea that lightsabers could be blue or red. But when they started working in post-production, they realized that the blue lightsaber against the skies of Tatooine could not be seen. So they changed it to green, and thus was born the concept that kyber crystals could produce a variety of colors, not just blue and red.
Nice.
Okay, well, I guess we can do our one sentence summaries then. Do you want to go first or do you want me to go first?
Leia saves the day.
Yay!
I almost said the woman is the only competent one, but pretty sure I already used that one.
Yeah. Mine is Return of the Space. And mine is longer, so you can take a shot or not take a shot. I don't remember which one we decided.
I don't remember either.
Just drink if your heart desires. And if it is safe and responsible to do so.
I am not drinking right now, mostly because I didn't think about it until we were already recording.
I'm drinking my Dr. Pepper, so I'll take a sip of that.
I had some jelly beans. That's a different kind of substance.
Yay.
Anyway. The film. So much in this film.
Yeah.
Also, it's fascinating to have, like, read basically half of the From a Certain Point of View on this film and not the other half. So I'm excited now to also read the rest of it and have a better sense of where I'm placing things because it's fresher in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
Just right off the bat, speaking of From a Certain Point of View, that one of the first stories in there is told from Jared's point of view. Mm-hmm. And he, for those of you who aren't super Star Wars nerds, he is the guy working for the Empire that has a conversation with Darth Vader in the beginning about the Death Star being ready on time.
Mm-hmm.
And
Jared.
Yes. And so we're not going to cover this story. I don't think neither Emily or I are going to pick that one. Yeah. But one of the things, so I'll talk about it here, though, is it kind of gives some backstory for what's happening with the second Death Star that I think is really helpful and makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. So the second Death Star is able to be completed so fast because they started constructing it before the first one was destroyed. They were planning on having two. So that's part of it. Secondly, while the Death Star wasn't going to be complete, we learn kind of through subtlety in this story that Jerdrad realizes, oh, they are publicly, now the universe knows, or the galaxy knows about the Death Star, so we don't need to build it in hiding anymore. Mm-hmm. But because of that, that means the rebels can kind of keep track of the progress. So what if we prioritize getting the weapon system up and running, even if the rest of the Death Star is still in the early stages of construction? And so that's kind of what happens in that story. And that also explains then later on Palpatine's trap for the Jedi, for not the Jedi, for the rebels, and how the Death Star is fully operational, as he says.
Yeah. I went in the movie when they were having the conversation, I was just like, yes, this is a ridiculous conversation to be having, because Vader is decidedly not forgiving in any way, shape, or form. Like, I don't know what he's on about. The only way it actually makes sense is, in fact, from a certain point of view books. And then it's like, ah, okay, I get what is happening now. But yeah. Yeah. Also, I just love the interplay between C-3PO and R2-D2. C-3PO is always so oblivious to everything, because C-3PO's memory gets wiped all the time. And then R2-D2 is like, no, this is the thing. This is all of the things. And C-3PO thinks he's better than everybody else because he's the protocol droid. And so it's just like, no, you can't possibly be right, R2-D2. But like when they go up and they're like, okay, we have to go do this thing, and C-3PO really does not want to be let in to Jabba's palace. He's like, tap tap, okay, bye. Like almost Jonah levels of does not want to do this, and that's even before he realizes that they're being given to Jabba as gifts. Also, his fluency in over 6 million languages does not include neurotypical.
It's true.
He is so very not able to read that.
Also, one of the other reasons I think C-3PO never knows the plan is not just because his memory is wiped all the time, but also because, like you said, he thinks he's better than everyone else, so he's totally a snitch. Like, he would go in there and be like, Luke Skywalker has his plan and stuff to save himself, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, Leia really is just such a badass in this whole movie. Like, from the start, she saves Han. I don't understand how everyone in Jabba's court knows that she's going to come do this and is able to keep quiet while she is doing it behind a curtain. That seems suspicious.
Yeah.
But I do love that she saves Han, she kills Jabba, and again, it is the reversal of the, like, damsel in distress. It is Leia coming in and saving everyone.
And even the super sexist outfit she's put into has a way of, though, of, like, undermining that, of, like, oh, look, she's eye candy, but really, no, she's gonna come, and even in that little skimpy thing she's wearing is able to save the day and kill Jabba and be super resourceful and stuff.
Yeah. And there's, we'll talk about it more in the deep dive, because there's so much of that type of thing that happens.
Yeah.
Just all the time.
And I've listened to a lot of podcasts on Star Wars. No surprise there. And a lot of them have cis straight men as at least one of the co-hosts, because sadly, the podcast world is predominated by especially white cis straight men. But the amount of men who openly talk about having Leia's the poster of her in wearing that outfit on their wall grosses me the fuck out. What is wrong with men?
It was so common everywhere. Like, it was part of a Friends episode.
Grosses me out. But I'm also ace, so, like, I just kind of find it all you allos weird anyway, so.
Yeah, but there's a difference between weird and
Creepy. But then we get Luke coming in to allegedly save the day. And I do love how there's also a flipping of roles here where he doesn't save the day, but he also gets captured right away. But, and we think he's going to kill Jabba, but no, it's Leia who does all that stuff. Pretty cool. But one of the things that's most notable about Luke in this installment is his lesbian haircut. It is like the most, it's the most like Midwestern lesbian haircut of all nine of the Skywalker films.
Midwestern lesbian haircuts are identical to, almost identical to Midwestern Karen haircuts. That's the problem.
True.
The Karens have taken the haircuts.
It's sad. It's sad.
Yes.
And reclaim the haircut, lesbians. Take it back.
We are going to talk about the Sarlacc story in our From a Certain Point of View thing, but
I love
it to say.
Right.
I love the Sarlacc.
Me too. Me too. You'll hear more. This is heads up for that episode, but you'll hear us more talk more about it. But I love the Sarlacc as well.
Yeah. And maybe that's a good, like, hey, here's some incentive to join our Patreon. Because this, I think this coming month, when this airs, the month of March, I think we could record our episode. Maybe. Yeah. So if you become a Patreon supporter, you'll get to hear all sorts of it. And I think those are the ones that we do with video. So if
you'll get to watch it for Patreon.
See it.
Yeah. If you're a regular non-Patreon person, you can listen to it on your main feed, but Patreon supporter, you get to watch us, and we usually wear fun shirts when we do those.
It's true, and we don't edit it as much.
I mean, to be fair, I don't really edit much anyway, but
I mean, yes. details. I do love that Luke is like, don't forget the droids, and they literally just like magnetize them up and take
and of
off.
Course how C-3PO is upside down in the sand
always.
Yeah,
I don't know how R2-D2 did the little like periscope thing without getting massive amounts of sand in.
Yeah, he probably did.
they probably both got a bath after that.
Yeah.
Also, then they go off on their adventures again, and Luke goes back to the Dagobah system. And Yoda, and gets confirmation of what Vader had said, that in fact Darth Vader, aka Anakin Skywalker, was Luke's father, and that there is a sister, and her name is Leia.
Right.
Which is a lot of stuff. And then Luke, like, rightfully says, "You lied to me."
Right.
And this, like, this point where Obi-Wan is like, I told you the truth from a certain point of view. It just feels like an excuse for lying by omission.
Yeah.
I vote no.
And I encourage all of you to watch the Lego adaptations of the Skywalker trilogy or play the game. Because the scene is particularly funny when, in the Lego adaptation, when Yoda says to Luke that he has a sister, and he's like, oh, it's Leia. And Yoda's like, perceptive in the Force you are. And Luke says, no, it's just the only woman I know. and then Yoda says, ah, indeed, fix that in the next one, we will, which I love.
That's fantastic. I like it. Yeah, that's really all I have for the Dagobah system and, you know, a rest in Force for Yoda.
Right. I mean, though, that's my mood, too. If whiny kid comes to me and starts asking a million questions, I would rather die than put up with it, too.
I mean,
it's like, I'll just roll over and die. You can figure this out on your own.
To be fair, you did point out that Luke is not quite as whiny this time.
It's true.
It's almost like he has learned a little bit about how to be an adult on his own.
Yeah.
I will not say the things that like really would troll our dear friend, but I will think right. them.
Me too. Then we make it to the forest moon of Endor. Mm-hmm. So.
Dun, dun, dun. But they only make it through because they fly casual.
Yeah. Whatever that means.
Fly casual.
Yep.
Be cool. Be cool. Yes. And we get to see Wicket, who is wonderful. Because the Ewoks are wonderful.
Yay. They are.
Yeah. And when they all get, like, caught in the net, which, you know, everybody saw coming except for Chewie. That particular scene where they're like, Luke's like, Han, can you reach my lightsaber? Because in Luke's mind, as, you know, formal official Jedi, lightsabers solve everything. And instead, R2-D2, everybody's, like, trying to figure out what to do, and R2-D2 is just like, I'm just going to cut the rope. And just, like, starts cutting the rope. Doesn't ask for permission, doesn't share any of that. Just, like, goes
yep. with it. The most resourceful of the bunch, for sure. I like how R2-D2 is basically a droid Swiss Army knife. Like, he has literally everything in him.
It's true. It's true. He's got a periscope. He's got the blade saw. He's got electricity rockets. And fire. You can do the flame.
Yeah. Hollow projection. All sorts of stuff. I love when C-3PO arises and the Ewoks all start worshiping him. And Han is like, tell them to let us go. And C-3PO says, it is against my programming to impersonate a deity. Which, just because of our Doctor Who binge watch, made me kind of think of it. That's basically the plot of the Aztecs. When
it's like, are you a deity or are you not?
Right. When Barbara impersonates the Aztec deity.
Mm-hmm.
An Aztec deity.
Yeah. Also, I love that R2 and Wicket become besties.
Right, of course. And they're about the same size, too. It's cute.
Exactly. Yeah.
My favorite scene in this movie, I think, is the scene, though, when they're in the Ewok village among the trees. And Luke and Leia are just kind of walking through the village on the rope bridges. It's so scenic, so beautiful. Love the shot and composition, but I also love like what they're saying and communicating to each other and the realization she has that, oh, I have my chosen family is also my bio family. Like, that's kind of weird and kind of cool. And I kind of always knew that. And her memories of her mother are just really sweet, how she talks about
that mother who died giving birth. Those memories.
Yeah, well, she has force memories.
Like the only memory, I was going to say the only way she can have memories is force memories.
I like that. And one of the things I love about Luke here, too, is he recognizes in that, like, Leia's like, why don't we just run away together? And he says, no, you would never do that because you are, I can't remember the term he uses, the phrase he uses, but basically says you are like badass in and of yourself and a very competent force user already. And then how it goes from that to Luke turning himself in and all that stuff. But then we have those three battles simultaneously, and I love the cutting between them. We have the battle of, first of words and wit between Palpatine, Vader, and Luke in the throne room, but then turns into a lightsaber battle. We have the space battle happening around the Death Star, and then we have the Endor battle between the Ewoks and the rebels and the stormtroopers. And I just think it's really well done, and it kind of keeps up the suspense because it keeps cutting away from one battle to the other and stuff, and you don't know what's happening. Just really well done, I think.
Yeah. And then to get the, like, okay, we have to do this. Oh, no, we can't. But we don't know what's going on. But then them. And then, ultimately, as we all knew they would, the Ewoks win because they are amazing. As is Leia, who is truly the hero of this whole movie, including her secret gun to shoot the stormtroopers.
And the flipping of that line, I love it. I love you. And she's the one that Simon goes, I know. And pulls out the gun and shoots him.
Yeah. It's true. It's true. I really do love the way that the Ewoks just like, they're like, and like having just read the story, Wicket's story in the book, that space of like, they have been living with the bug people, the stormtroopers, for a bit. And the stormtroopers have never been kind, have never been nice, have never done anything like good. And so they know they don't like them, but they also know that they don't quite have the capacity right now. They've done some stuff, some like little, just to make sure they know they're not welcome. But then it is like this combination of a couple random people and a Wookiee and two droids, and the Ewoks are like, okay, now's our chance. And they really do. They just like bulldoze them down.
I also forgot to mention another favorite scene of mine in this movie is the speeder chase through the forest. Like, that is so well done. We've been watching for all of these, the theatrical releases as opposed to the special editions. And even in the theatrical release, like the cutting into the against the green screen and cutting it into the forest footage just is done very well. And there's only like a few spots where you can kind of, where it looks a little jaunty or something, but and then my second favorite line in the whole franchise didn't actually make it into the movie, but if you ever listen to the radio play adaptation of Return of the Jedi, when Han lets Lando borrow the Millennium Falcon, Han says, not a scratch, and Lando agrees. Then they, as we see in the movie, the satellite dish of the Millennium Falcon, the radio communication dish or whatever, gets knocked off as they're flying through the Death Star. So clearly there's some scratches on there. And so when they land on the planet Endor after the battle, Lando and Han reunite, and in the radio play version, Han's like, what happened? You promised there wouldn't be a scratch. And Lando replies, there's not a scratch. All the pieces that had scratches on them fell off, which I just love that exchange. So second favorite line in the whole franchise.
Yeah. I do like the way that, as you mentioned that, the way that Han echoes your favorite line. That yes. Everybody else is having delusions of grandeur.
Yeah.
There. Just like C-3PO. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't actually say that in that episode. So yeah, My favorite line in all of Star Wars is in The Empire Strikes Back when C-3PO says, I'm standing here in pieces and you're having delusions of grandeur.
So. While R2 like goes to save the world.
Yep. Yeah.
Like they do, because R2 is awesome.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Also, this is our first introduction to Mon Mothma, right?
Yeah.
So I'm excited to look deeper into her, but she comes up in the book too. So we'll be talking more about her then.
And she is one of your characters that you're tracing?
It's true, because even the cishet white women need the space to grow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Mon Mothma does that. I don't know if she's actually cishet, but, you know.
Well, are we ready for our deep theological discussion? Who wants to start?
You have stuff written down first.
Okay, we're just going to do an order. Then let's just do an order. So, we begin with Luke wearing clerics. Like, he looks like he's wearing clerics throughout the whole movie. He's missing the tab, but there's still the space where the tab would go in his little shirt.
Yeah, he definitely is like giving priestly vibes.
Yeah, and that's definitely intentional. And something else though that is intentional is the color symbolism in this movie. We have talked before, and it'll keep coming up, about the light dark binary, all the issues around that, and the especially racism and colorism that goes into the ways that we, in the English language especially, talk, delineate white as good and black or dark as bad or scary or something. Mm-hmm. That said, it was an intentional choice for Luke to wear black in this movie because they wanted to... He spends the first two movies wearing white. He's on the light side of the force, the good side. Is this a movie he's going to be tempted into the dark side when he's wearing all black from beginning to end? And so it's supposed to up that kind of the question of where his loyalties lie, what side of the force he's mm-hmm. going to be on. And that whole temptation arc, I love. It's very appropriate for Lent, by the way, of like yes, the temptation yes. of Luke.
I was going to say the wilderness of Christ.
Right. And but it's also like that Hamlet arc, like that internal turmoil. And like for a movie which tells stories visually, as a, we don't get to access much interior lives of characters. And yet even so, I think it's very palpable and suspenseful. Like, is Luke going to give in to the temptation? Is he going to mm-hmm. fall to the dark side or not?
Well, and there is the one point in that final battle where it's really unclear.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, and I think that also echoes back or forward, depending on how we're talking about the movies, to Anakin, that there is that, like, the space of pushing people toward the dark side is the space of family.
Mm-hmm.
And that sort of love, protection, betrayal.
Yeah. And their arc mirrors each other's arcs very intentionally. And even before the prequel movies came out, you could kind of see before, like, Lucas had fully mapped out what Anakin's story was, we still kind of see Luke following in his dad's footsteps. In the first movie, we hear, your dad was a great pilot. Oh, what is Luke really good at? Piloting. Then the second movie, we also hear about how Darth Vader is more machine. And so what happens in the second movie, Luke gets an assistive device, which is a machine. And then in this third one, they're wearing the same color throughout the whole movie. And there's scenes where, like you said, Emily, you really start to wonder, is he going to turn to the dark side when he lashes out in anger and stuff like that over Leia being potentially tempted to the dark side and stuff. So definitely mirroring that intentionally. And yeah. And speaking of Hamlet, there are ghosts in this movie. We have three Force ghosts now with Anakin. And I love the theatrical version having Sebastian Shaw as Anakin. And that makes so much more sense than putting Hayden Christensen in as the Force ghost in the special versions. I don't understand. You said you know the reasoning and understand it even if you don't agree with it. I even understand it. Like, I don't get why.
I think it is part of the whitewashing of characters, that in a similar way to which Han can no longer be the one who shot first in the, like, assembly cut or whatever, that Han can't have been the kind of person that shoots first in order to be a redeemable character or a character that we like. We meaning the audience writ large. Mm-hmm. And I think for Anakin, Darth Vader ghost, there is a similar thing of, in order to be a Force ghost, to be one with the Force, it can't be the one who was Darth Vader. It has to be before that. Has to be the Anakin before turning to the dark side, because there is not space created in this universe for redemption and for a returning. And there is in, like, the From a Certain Point of View books, we get those mm-hmm. places of, like, come on, Anakin, just come back, like, come back to us kind of thing. But in the movies, the way particularly that the story is told to be more perfect, it is only the pre-Vader Anakin that could be a Force ghost. There's a whole other thing, and we will get into this, about like how you become a Force ghost, because this breaks all of what I knew about how you become a Force ghost.
Oh, interesting. You have to tell me.
Yeah.
What you knew about that. When we get to the Force lore section. Okay, mm-hmm, cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, so this, the whole context, like, so many different times in this movie, the context is missed and people are completely either like completely misunderstood or completely underestimated, right? So like from the Sarlacc pit, the Sarlacc being a vegetarian, right, is just totally missed by everybody. It takes 1,000 years for you to slowly digest because the Sarlacc is not meant for or equipped to digest you. But then also, like, Han's kind of offhand comment of, I don't think the Empire had Wookiees in mind when they designed this thing. Right? who are we centering, and who's like just forgotten about or glance or kind of looked over, overlooked? And then even when it comes to the Ewoks, right? Leia is kind to the Ewoks, and in the Wicket story, the last part, like, and I actually texted this to you while I was finishing the story pace, but I was like, anyone who shared snacks was worth getting to know. And that's like, that is what marks Leia in particular, mm-hmm, as good for the Ewoks. And Han and the Ewoks get into conflict because he dismisses them for their size and their cuteness. And there's just, and the stormtroopers dismiss them, and the fans of Star Wars dismiss, like, so many different people who are just like offhandedly dismissing the Ewoks, or mm-hmm, like Leia, whose feelings and experiences get totally ignored. Right, she gets underestimated in the skimpy outfit, and yet is the one to kill Jabba, who no one has ever, like, no one else has ever managed that before. And then Luke's like, our father, who made you watch as he destroyed your entire planet, really does have some good in him. Which is like, you're kind of missing a whole bunch of emotion there, Luke.
Yeah.
And even Vader doesn't say, tell your sister I'm sorry. He says, tell your sister you were right about me. So there's this, like, concern for self-image over concern for Leia that happens just again and again and again and again. And that, from, like, what we have heard about Carrie Fisher, like, that also was the case in how Carrie was treated compared to Mark Hamill or Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
So it's just like, ugh, again and again and again. I mean, mm-hmm, even like C-3PO, who presumably, right, is proficient in 6 million forms of communication and can, like, either produce the sound of lightsabers and ships or can record it. And records it a lot and then reproduces it to tell the story of what has happened, and yet cannot speak in Shriwook, or will not speak in Shriwook, or will not share Shriwook. Like, and there's an argument for if it's, like, there is a difference if C-3PO would have to record the voice, then reproducing somebody's recorded voice without consent is a whole different thing.
Yeah.
Hashtag AI is bad. But, like, the assumption that Wookiees can and will learn basic galactic, even though they cannot speak it because their vocal cords don't allow them to, and yet no one is going to learn their language.
Yep. Yep.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Also, there's a whole lot with Anakin and Vader. I think it's interesting that with Emperor Palpatine, he continually is like, my master. And Palpatine is like, my friend.
Yeah.
Interesting dynamic.
Yeah. And I love this version of Yoda and Obi-Wan, and they are my two of my characters I'm going to track, and I think I'm going to track them together because most of the movies they show up together.
Oh yeah.
But there's definitely an evolution in their understanding of attachment that happens sometime after the collapse of the Jedi's order in the prequel trilogy and in the 20 years before this trilogy supposedly takes place. They've learned that this notion of no attachments is not actually helpful. And so one of the things that I like here is the phrase of being mindful of your emotions, not avoiding them, not detaching yourself from them, but being mindful of them. And it's so different from when Yoda in The Phantom Menace says, anger leads to hate, hate leads to suffering and the dark side or whatever. And it's like, those are emotions. Everybody experiences these emotions. And so it's definitely a different Yoda seems to be much more wise and have grown in that. And I also I like the notion though that hatred may be hatred may be able to lead to the dark side. They talk about that, let your hate flow through you. But what they're really talking about is let your hate turn into violence. And that's what the dark side is about, is and turning hate into violence. And anger into violence.
Yeah, because I think I was struck by Yoda's comment, bury your feelings deep down, Luke. They do you credit, but they could be made to serve the Emperor. And ultimately, that's how Darth Vader finds out about Leia. But I think what's so interesting, particularly with anger, is that anger is an emotion. Which in our current culture, we frequently forget that anger is an emotion, right? Like, we teach people who we want to be men and boys that anger is fine, that they're not supposed to have any emotions, but anger is fine. And yet, anger is just an emotion. It is one of many emotions. And the place where it gets dangerous, right, is when anger leads to violence, when anger is allowed to fester into violence. And so that space, I think, is a really important alternative space and option. And I feel like they are starting to get at that, but I guess I'm not convinced that they're quite all there yet in the Jedi Order at this point.
But yeah, I mean, I feel like Yoda is pretty there. Obi-Wan, I'm not sure about. But by the time we get to the sequel trilogy, I feel like Yoda's definitely there, because in his appearance in The Last Jedi, he's like basically rips Luke apart. It's like, no, you got all this wrong. You're repeating our mistakes. Stop it.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But like, where did Luke get those mistakes from?
Yep. Good point.
Yeah. Also, it just is profoundly annoying to me that they throw around military titles like candy. And it's really just to, like, whoever's the main character at the time. Like, sure, you've been not at all involved until now, but you happen to have a spaceship or be able to fly something. Sure, we'll make you a whatever they make Lando. And
well, he's a general, but I wonder, this movie takes place about a year after the first one. So we don't, and Han is reuniting with Lando after being frozen carbonite. So he may have missed Lando rising through the ranks and becoming a general in that time. I mean, still a year is really fast.
But also Lando was like trying to rescue Luke or rescue Han. So I don't know. It just, they do it to Han too, right? Like, they all get these like fancy titles, and I just
And I think that's also
like for the like
in part because the rebels are just like so disorganized and like literally anybody who shows up, here's the rank, go for it.
Here's the new rank. Please don't leave us. Please. Yeah. Please just stay. Just once. Yeah. Also, I realized that Han is basically Peter.
Peter the Apostle. Peter the Apostle.
Yes. He'll say whatever comes to mind. He speaks before he thinks. He acts before he thinks. Sometimes it's great and sometimes it's terrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Peter in a nutshell.
Sounds about right. Mm-hmm. So I have two more things and they're kind of related, but the first one I think is the one I'm really interested in the debate around, which is George Lucas has claimed that Anakin's redemption in this movie proves that he was, in fact, the chosen one all along, because he's the one who ultimately defeats Palpatine and brings, and by both his and Palpatine's death, ends this Order of the Sith and brings balance to the Force, which of course we've talked about before is getting rid of the dark side actually.
Balance? But no, that's balance, not how we define balance, people.
But in the way that it has been presented in this film, that I mean in the trilogy thus far, like that seems to be balanced. So like was George Lucas just thinks that Anakin really was the chosen one and that his redemption here proves it. What do we think? Do we agree with that?
No. No. It's like, it is actually one of the Nerds at Church first season episodes that came out this in February as like a reposting for lectionary stuff. We talk about the trope of redemption equals death, and that is what happens. Like,
ooh, also listen to Horror Nerds at Church's Patreon episode on redemption arcs and redemption equals death too.
Ooh, we will, you know, link to those in the stuffs.
Yeah.
But the space where like so often this happens, where someone who commits harm, who is on the like bad side or whatever, then like realizes that they're wrong or changes their heart or whatever, but instead of or before they can really make amends and repair the harm that they've done, they're killed. And sometimes it's self-sacrifice and sometimes it's not. In this case, like, there is an amount of self-sacrifice, kind of, but not really, right? Because like Vader is dying when he picks up Palpatine, so like the one kind of act of redemption is not like a self-sacrifice type of redemption, but it's still like an act of trying to like fix a thing that he did. But nowhere in that does he do anything to repair the harm that he has committed against his daughter.
Mm-hmm. Like, you legit destroyed her, well, was part of destroying, it was General Tarkin's decision, but or Admiral Tarkin's, Grand Moff Tarkin's decision. All these weird made-up Star Wars titles. But anyway, but still, like, mm-hmm. He was part of the destruction of her entire planet. And she takes that news pretty well. Like, oh, my dad was the one who did this the whole time. She's just like, okay, I'm cool with it.
Oh, my dad. Which brings me to, I was realizing, like, one of the things that we talked about in starting this season was that anything is horror if you look at it right.
Mm-hmm.
And this, I think, this episode in particular does a great example of family as horror.
Mm.
That like, and even the whole trilogy, right? That particularly for Leia, more than anybody else, family is horror in terms of like the biological family that she has. She has confused and confusing feelings with Luke, which are attributed to, mm-hmm. you know, the fact that she doesn't become his sister until the third movie. And there's supposed to be a potential love interest, right? But her father, her biological father, has committed so much harm to mm-hmm. her and her people. And then, like, her brother, who is friend, lover, brother, some combination of those throughout, has no caring concern for her grief and her feelings and what is going on with her. Like, that is just so far off his radar, and he is so oblivious to anything going on with her that, like, she has to take care of herself. She has to be the one to take care mm-hmm. of herself. She has to be the one to deal with her own feelings and her own grief. And she doesn't have, as much as it seems like maybe she has a chosen family and support, they just, like, are not there for her in the ways that she needs them to be.
Yeah.
But they expect her to be, like, right there for them for everything.
Yeah. And, I mean, one aspect of Leia and Luke's difference is Leia was raised in the lap of luxury, mm-hmm. whereas Luke was raised as a poor farmer.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that difference there, but Leia's willingness to risk it all again and again for the sake of the rebellion, which is right in the very first movie, I mm-hmm. think sets her apart from that. Even if she was raised in luxury, she's willing mm-hmm. to give it all away again and again for the rebellion.
Yeah.
Did you actually answer why Anakin wasn't the chosen one? Is it just because he didn't deserve redemption?
I mean, if the theory is that he is still the chosen one because he's redeemed at the end, I don't think he was redeemed at the end, and so that's a faulty premise. But I don't know what the, like, actual, like, what the requirements are to become a chosen one.
The chosen one is to, according to the interpretation of the Jedi, which we can disagree with because that's not actual balance, as we said, it's to end the Sith. It's to end the Sith. And so what did he end up being the chosen one? By destroying the Sith. And by killing Palpatine. That seems to say.
I did not see a body. I'm just saying.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Spoilers. So that's the chosen one is supposed to end the Sith.
Yeah, that's what they say in the. That's what Obi-Wan says to Anakin as he leaves him on the fires of Mustafar in episode 3. He says, "You were supposed to be the chosen one. You're supposed to destroy the Sith, not join them."
I think it's the final trilogy is where we get the chosen one.
Yeah, so then is Rey the chosen one?
Although I despise the, like, third movie, but yeah. Like, I think Rey is the chosen one more than anybody else, if that is the requirement. And that it's, like, Rey and Kylo Ren together.
Yeah. And Poe and all the other people, like, it's a whole band in there that, like, work together, as opposed to this one. It's like, by the end of this movie, it's really like Luke is the one who is we all should be rooting for by the end of this one. Well, kind of the last thing I have then is to ask the question, what's love got to do with it? As the great Tina Turner has asked, right? What's love got to do? Got to do? Anyway, well, everything is what I think. I feel like this movie, if this movie has a central message, I'm not saying it does, but like we could interpret that central message being this kind of theology of love. And so we learn that it is Anakin's attachment that sends him to the dark side, but it is Luke's attachment that keeps him connected to the light side, attachment to his family, attachment to his father, and Luke's willingness to die for his dad, essentially, instead of striking his dad down, refusing. At the end of the day, he gets into a fight with his dad, of course, with the lightsabers and stuff, but then he ultimately turns off his weapon and is willing to die for his dad's redemption, is what actually saves his dad. And so it's like this idea that love can actually change people's hearts, can change people's minds. It's a very Augustinian kind of understanding of love. Augustine was a bishop of Hippo of Africa. If you ever look up pictures of Augustine and see him as white, that's a lie. He was definitely, he was the bishop of Africa. Why does everybody think of Augustine as white? Anyway, so Augustine has this beautiful theology of love. It's a theology that Luther took and ran with as well. But basically, God is so deeply in love with humankind, and and our love is but a reflection of God's love and that kind of thing. And so if love is kind of the ties that bind, and the way that Obi-Wan describes the Force in the first film as the connection between all living things, what is that connection other than love? And so I feel like love is ultimately the expression of the Force, and it's the expression of this film, and it's what ultimately saves the day.
Interesting. Because I was thinking about love too in some capacity, because that's like the whole thing with Anakin turning to the dark side was ostensibly for the sake of his family and love of his family. And so then it's no wonder that his one like ultimate rebellion against the dark side also comes for the sake of his family.
Yeah.
And for the love of his family.
And but his love in the beginning is like this controlling love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, which is like a very different cool kind of love. Yeah. It like this controlling, wanting to control why am I blanking on her name? Queen Amidala, Padme. Senator Amidala, Padme. Yes, thank you. And wanting to control her, wanting to prevent her from dying and stuff like that. That turns into this obsession and this kind of stalkerish obsession. And then that leads to his downfall and also his killing of her. And
things. Yeah. So,
anything else for a deep dive?
No.
Then let's get into some Force lore. Force lore.
Okay. Okay. According to Yoda. According to Yoda, if you're strong enough with the Force, you can stay alive forever.
Wait, he says that?
Sounds fake. He says that he is not that strong with the Force, that he is going to die because he is not that strong with the Force. He's strong with the Force, but not that strong.
Oh, yeah. And that's, I think that might be in part because what turned Anakin to the dark side was Palpatine's promise that one of the dark side powers is to be immortal.
Yeah.
And so, like, yeah.
I know. It just seems weird because, yeah, the immortality piece and that it's connected to the Force, not the dark side of the Force, just being super duper strong with the Force. Speaking of being super duper strong with the Force.
Oh, Force ghosts?
Yes.
I'm curious, what do you think is the requirement to be a Force ghost? Because you had mentioned that earlier.
I mentioned it earlier because in both of the From a Certain Point of View books that we read, there was a very clear story, and even I think it was in Clone Wars, maybe there was a mini story arc with Yoda where there's a clear in order to be one with the Force and become a Force ghost, you have to be one with the Force, and you have to do this preparation stuff in order to then, when it is your time, become one with the Force. So Yoda does that. Qui-Gon talking to Obi-Wan does, Obi-Wan then does it. And I think it was Qui-Gon to Yoda originally, but also maybe a little bit of Obi-Wan to Yoda who does it. And so then they become one with the Force, and become Force ghosts. And then Anakin, who I don't think has ever done that, dies, and ta-da! Force ghost.
So Qui-Gon is the, in the current canon, Qui-Gon is the first known Force user who is able to Force ghost. And he did not, and there does not seem to be the sense that he knew how to do that before he died, but it was through his deep mystical connection with the Force that in his death he learned how to do it. And then he's able to teach it to Obi-Wan and Yoda by extension, which I think is what that preparation is for, because they may not have as deep or close of a connection for him to intuitively know how to do it. By Anakin being able to be a Force ghost, I think the suggestion is because he is supposedly, if he is the chosen one, supposedly the most powerful Force user of all time in history, able to intuitively learn how to do it as well when he dies and turns to the light side of the Force in his dying moments. Which is very like, I just have to say, it's very much that... I can never think of the right name of it, but the type of salvation that a lot of evangelicals say, that if you can be an axe murderer, but as long as you confess Jesus in the last few moments of your life, you are instantly saved. So it kind of feels like that. Oh, Darth Vader is this awful, horrible person, but he confesses Jesus in his dying moments and is saved and turns into a Force ghost.
Yeah, well, and it's like with the new... I think we talked about this in the like newest Ghostbusters, that like he was a terrible father, but that all gets erased because he left this ghost for the kids to save the world from.
Yeah. So, but unclear, I think. Yeah,
the Force ghost. Highly suspicious.
And Force ghost. And Force ghosts to. Be clear is that when all creatures die, Jedi or not, dark side user or not, they become one with the Force. They return to the Force. This is very like, and this I think is also kind of that connection of Augustine to understanding of love, is like when we die, we become fully united with God's love. Kind of like when we die, we become fully united to the Force. It doesn't matter if you're dark side or light side. The ability to be a Force ghost is ability to retain your consciousness, so while you are one with the Force, or fully one with the Force, you're able to somehow summon your consciousness from that oneness and present it to other people, which is kind of weird, period. Mm. There's no, like, clear way to think about how that truly works. Although I will say Claudia Gray does a beautiful job of describing that in the first, from a certain point of view, when she talks about Qui-Gon returning from the oneness of the Force to his consciousness.
Yeah, I did like how she depicted that. I guess the other piece then for me is, if everybody returns to the Force when they die, why does Obi-Wan's body disappear?
Because Obi-Wan his body, his corporeal remains are returned to the Force. It's kind of like...
instantaneously.
Yeah, so like typically a body will decay and rot. It's only your soul or whatever that returns to the oneness of the Force. But in Obi-Wan's case, because he had done all that prep work with Qui-Gon and stuff, his fullness of his body is raptured in that moment, I guess, and taken up to the Force heaven.
Mm-hmm. I don't buy it, but okay.
Yeah. And same with Yoda's, because his kind of disappears too.
I was going to say, I was not looking at the screen when it happened, and so I wasn't sure if it was a retcon or if it was in the theater.
But Vader's body doesn't, as far as we can tell. So.
Right? There's like so much evidence for the ways that we have understood Force ghosts to come into being and...
Well, Qui-Gon's didn't either. Qui-Gon gets cut in half and then just dies.
To be fair, I didn't know that about Qui-Gon, because it's been too long. It's been too long. But yeah.
Well, some other Force lore we get here is the first time we see Force Lightning depicted on screen in the chronology of the release dates of the film. And we later learn that it is specifically a dark side power of the Force. And we also learn...
Does that make Storm a dark side Force user?
If she was in this universe, potentially. But her powers are explained through a mutation that allows her to connect to the weather in the X-Men universe. So, not quite, a little different. Okay. But it would be cool. She would be a pretty cool Sith if they brought her somehow into the Force universe. But one of the reasons Vader is not able to use Force Lightning is because it would, A, interfere with his machinery that keeps him alive, but also because he does not have hands from which the Force Lightning would come out of. He cannot do it either. It's a skill that he's never able to learn, even though he's super powerful, which is why we never see Vader use Dark Side of the Force. All right, okay, Force Lightning.
Yeah. I mean, I'm okay with that because I think it's important that we don't just like magically make up for disabilities, as we talked about in our episode with Beth on Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah. So
I'm cool with that. But
if you ever wondered, that's the expanded universe's explanation for why that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And then the last thing I have for Force lore is Luke's creation of a lightsaber. When Vader sees it, he says, "You created your first lightsaber. Your skills are complete." Then we go to the prequel trilogy and the Clone Wars, especially that anime show, and we learn, no, building a lightsaber is something the younglings do before they're able to become a Padawan. So is it really like a completion? So just a weird little continuity thing there. But I mean, there is a sense
it's almost like the homeschool version of Jedi school.
Yeah.
Goes through the homeschool version and it's like, oh yeah, by the time you graduate, in order to like really count as graduated, you have to like check these boxes. We probably should have taught you the ABCs at some point.
Yeah. So I do love that. But I mean, it does, either way though, the building of a lightsaber is a rite of passage for the Jedi. And that comes up again and again, even though in the prequel trilogy, like you said, it happens from transitioning from youngling to being able to be a candidate to be a Padawan. But it's still, either way, it's a transition. It's a big thing. So, okay. Anything else for Force lore you have?
No, I just had the one.
Sweet. Well then. Obviously. Yeah. That's what we're here for. Out of 10 Kyber crystals, what would you rate this one? Do you have a favorite kill?
I'm going to go for a 9 out of 10 Kyber crystals. Wow. I really liked it. And I love Ewoks and Leia saves the day. So, like, how do you go wrong with that? And then my favorite kill... is my favorite kill. I think there are two of them. It's in the battle with the Ewoks when they have the two giant logs come from either side and just and
hit the AT-ST.
The AT-ST, and then the other one where they like tie up the feet or whatever. That like there's so much of the Empire's AT-ST, all of their like stuff that's supposed to be so impenetrable and so protected, and then the Ewoks are like, bring it.
Right. Love it. I would rate this, so interestingly, I will say is that for a long time as a kid I really liked this one because of the Ewoks, but when I started to become
then couldn't actually become a kid. But then God said no.
But then when God didn't let me become an Ewok, I became salty. And so this one dropped down in my ratings for a while. And also when I was a true Star Wars fan for a while, This one is not as well regarded. It's usually seen as like the worst of the original three. Still really, really good, but the out of the first three, this one
is. Okay, but to be perfectly clear, on this podcast, we do not stand real Star Wars fans. Just so our listeners know.
I know. So what I'm saying is. I
said to give the disclaimer.
Yes. What I'm saying though is I now, having rewatched it again, and especially watching it from a theological angle, and a horror angle. We didn't really talk about horror in this movie, aside from the family as horror, but like that whole final battle is pretty terrifying. Luke versus Vader versus Palpatine. But anyway, watching it from that angle and really kind of picking up on that, the thread of Luke's internal wrestling between light and dark side of the Force. That scene with him and Leia on the treetops, and that realization about love being kind of the thing that binds everything together and saves the day. I'm going to rate this an 8.5 out of 10 Kyber crystals. Like, it's pretty high up there. It's really good. Mm-hmm. And this is a green Kyber crystal, the same color as Luke's fancy new lightsaber.
And do you have a favorite kill?
Yeah, I think I'm going to say Jabba, because we're expecting Luke to be the one to kill Jabba, but nope, it's Leia, and she's as awesome as ever, and kills him pretty easily. She was just waiting for the moment to do it, but she was able to do it. So, go Leia. Any jump scares for you?
I did not have any jump scares. So
surprise, surprise. Okay, so in 2 weeks, you can say our next Star Wars movie.
In 2 weeks, our next Star Wars movie is Star Wars Episode One, The Phantom Menace, which is as terrible and wonderful as everybody claims. I loved it because it was the first one I saw in theaters.
I loved it too when I was a kid, to be honest. We'll get there.
Yep.
And then, but next week, we are going to be covering Alien Cubed with special guest Mae Forrest Barnes. And we already recorded that one, so definitely tune in. It's going to be a really fun conversation.
We are covering the
theatrical version. Yes. And we will be covering separately the assembly cut. So in 3 weeks, come back for the assembly cut.
Also, definitely Does the Dog Die, that movie.
Yes. Do it for all our movies. Spoilers. If you have that, but yeah.
Yeah. But if especially you, this one. Yeah. Very, 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 yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Well, that's it for our show. Our theme music was by Matt May. Horror Nerds at Church releases seasonally on Thursdays. Please comment, rate, subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Especially if you can't be a patron supporter, it's a free way to help spread the news about our podcast and evangelize. And share our posts on social media. That's another free way to evangelize us with your friends. Support us on Patreon. Like we said earlier, get exclusive access to all those cool things we're talking about. Movie commentaries, BooTubes, more bonus content by going to patreon.com/horrornerdsatchurch. It starts at only $5 to sign up. So it is much cheaper than Jabba's floating skiff. Right? No, I feel like we can do something better than that. I don't know. It's cheaper than Jabba's floating skiff. I'll leave it.
I mean, it's also probably cheaper than having your base be in an area full of Ewoks and the constant and the way that they constantly just like they're not taking them on by themselves, but they just make everything a little harder.
Yep, for sure.
The constant repairs and all of that.
Much cheaper than a Kyber crystal, too. They're apparently hard to come by since the Empire keeps using them for their Death Stars.
It's true. It's true.
They rent my camera, but I'll keep going. Follow us on social media, Facebook and Instagram at Horror Nerds at Church, and Blue Sky and Twitter at HNACPOD for all the latest updates about upcoming films, news, and other announcements. Until next time, what's love got to do with it? Got to do with it, got to do with it. What's love got to do with it? Got to do with it. Everything.
Yay, love.